hits just keep on coming.
Let's start the show. You know what time it is.
What up? It's the Powerhouse Squad. The Powerhouse Squad of radio.
The Powerhouse Squad is in the house. With Tone Robbins.
Live and direct.
Sophia Alexandria.
I am in the house. What's going on?
And Brother Al.
Hey, what's up?
You know, it's not just the wisdom. It's the basis of understanding of the subject.
Yeah. Once again, the Powerhouse Squad is in the house. We're just waiting for everybody to pop on in, get in, get with it. Today is going to be a great day. We're going to keep it up open. Mike, don't forget the phone lines are open. 516-418-5805. Come on in. Don't forget, if you are tuning in from YouTube and on Facebook, please like, subscribe, and do not forget to download. We are here. The Powerhouse Squad is in the house, and we are ready to begin. So, listen, let's get into a little bit of what's been going on in the news. We've been hearing a lot of stuff. You know what's going on. So, you know what that time is, right? It's time for the news.
Live on NFL Radio Studios in Sanford, Maine, premium local and national and international news. Keeping you updated to the current events. It's NSL Radio News. Your host, Brother Alfred of the Powerhouse Squad. So, let's get into it. And let's get ready to stay informed.
You know what it is. It's that time again. It's that time. Listen, straight from the People's News, we hear Tamara Braxton, a.k.a. and Tamara Mowry, a.k.a. you remember the two twins? All right, and Tamara Braxton, you know, is Toni Braxton's sister. You know, they have a little bit of exchange, sharing exchanges after a real drama. Incident has occurred. You know about the Real Housewives and all that thing going on. But you know, you've been hearing some other things going on out there in the news today. So listen, we are really here and definitely making something happen with this because it's going on. Last week, Ms. Mowry, 42-year-old former Real Housewives and co-stars in Houston, got together for the first time, and they got into it. And it was an ongoing situation, has to do with the pandemic. And, you know, but they're trying to, they've been trying to work it out. Behind the scenes, yes, when a person's on camera, they are, they're doing what they do. And, they try their best to make things happen the best way they can and definitely keep that going. So, it's been a very eventful year as far as the Braxton family. You know, there's been some tragedies going on and behind the scenes and as far as that's been going on. And, it's been something very tragically, that we're trying to deal with. Plus, there's been some long rumors about the husband or might be involved with somebody or something like that. But how rumors go. So anyways, we keep keeping it on that level. Also in news, we've been hearing about it right here. What's going on? The House has just passed a $1.9 billion bill to pay for a capital security upgrade for domestic defenses. When it comes out, as you heard, since January 9th, an insurrection, the attack on the Capitol, they've been trying to find more funding to protect the Capitol and protect the United States, buildings. So we're trying to put infrastructure funds in place so that stuff like this does not happen again. Okay? So, with that being going on, my name is Brother Alfred, and this is a little bit of the news, and we are out of here.
Live on NSF Radio Studios in Sanford, Maine. Premium local and national and international news. Keeping you updated to the current events. It's NSF Radio News.
All right. Powerhouse Squad, sound up. Brother Tone, are you in the house?
Hello.
All right. Sister Sophia, are you in the house?
I'm here. Hey, everybody, what's going on?
All right. Please, don't forget, download the app. Get the latest information where Sister Sophia or Brother Tone, what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? They're left, you know. Trust me, it's always going to be up there. It's, that notification will hit you. Please open up and say, I like the notifications or know what's going on. And on the app, and they will let you know every week or every day if they have an event coming on. You will be the first to know. You will be get first dibs to the programs on that they may offer, whether it's counseling from Sister Sophia or, you know, guidance that you might need, but Brother Tone can give out to you and help you on the aid on your path to discovery. All right. We're going to continue. First thing we're going to do, we're going to start from where we left off last week. Okay. Now, Brother Tone, you and I were talking, and Sister Sophia, we were talking at the end. You all were. We was talking about the policing in black communities, as well as we was going into the issues of, you know, the unfair bias treatment, so-called other humans were being treated versus us as a human whole. You know. Trying to be political PC on that with that language, but anyways,
you ain't gotta be. They ain't kind to us. I beat up three this weekend, but go ahead. Let's keep going.
So, but anyway, yo, I just want to say, you know, it's messed up. So, you know, I let you know that, you know, I took what we discussed to heart. And believe it or not, we've started a program at NSF with the police departments. We figured, okay, if it's a mental issue within the park department, so maybe they're not knowing how to, you know, be equal all the way around and stop the stigmatization. So we started a fatherhood ambassadors program, which is, means that the program basically goes into the police department. And we help, we put the fatherhood program in the police departments where we do mental health for the police officers. It's sort of like a check. Before that cop gets into that police car and check his car, we do a mental check on the officer. So the officer can't, if he's not looking good, he ain't touching our car that day. And the chief is pulling him. So we've had, meaning we're doing a test run right now and trying to fix something. And if this thing goes good, we'll take it nationwide. Because, you know, it's time. Because this stuff got to stop. I mean, something's got to go. Because this, if this thing was put into place, there's no excuse. And you can't say, oh, I'm not racist. No, I'm not bigot. I'm not biased. Well, you know what? First of all, if I'm checking you before you get out of that car and you're still doing the same thing, yeah, you're racist, man, and you need to be off my department. I'm sorry. We don't tolerate that. We're here for the people. We work for the people. That's what you're here for. That's it. No excuse. You now have no excuse.
Now, that's what I like right there. You said something right there, because I was thinking in my head as you was talking about the program. And, you know, simply said, man, people are people. No title makes you better than your fellow man, because one of the great illustrations of that was the wrongdoing. Ironically, I remember this of a cop who sexually assaulted Thandie. That's her government name, Thandie, the actress Thandie, in the movie where she was played the wife of Terrence Howard, and he kind of put his hands up her skirt slightly, as you know, they doing the pat down, and Ultimately, at the end of the story, I think the car flipped over, and the cop had to come and rescue the people that were turned over in the car, and he had to face that woman again, and she started having those frailty moments where she was like, get away from me, because she remembered the last time that he made her feel very uncomfortable when he did the pat down and assaulted them, her and her husband, just on a simple, you know, you look suspicious type situation. And that's it, man. That's just perfect right there to say, look, bro, you never know. Life chances may meet again. What's George Jefferson's show? The Jeffersons.
Yeah, Jefferson. Right. Right.
Check it. Okay. George met a racist, wealthy racist man who had a stroke or heart attack episode, and George performed CPR on that guy. And when he revived him, his son said to him, yeah, you want to thank Mr. Jefferson for saving you? And he looked right at George and said,
oh,
he saved me? You should have let me die. That's how strong he felt.
Wow.
About another race. Just the indifferences of it, man. So people are people, man. I don't understand why anyone walking this God-given earth feels as though they are on any higher plane than any other person, because I don't see you. You don't have wings. You don't have little floaters on your feet that have you elevate or look any different from any of your fellow men. And your status should not dictate or give you any more entitlement and privileges than anyone else when it comes to, you know, common things. Of course, money as your resource, as a tool to purchase certain things, that's different. But
right.
Just the idea of life and the pursuit of happiness that's written in the Constitution, it should be one and the same for all people. I mean, I know a lot of people like to reflect and go back and speak on the three-fifths, this or that, in the Constitution. But at this point, we're so beyond that. I mean, we've been living amongst each other for so many years at this stage. For anyone to still continue to revert to that, as with any merit, I'm gonna be blunt. I think you're stupid at this point. I can't say anything else. I don't see a person cut down in stature because you deem them a 3/5 of an individual. You know what I mean? A 6'7" guy is a 6'7" guy versus a 5'8" guy, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That your height is the only difference in that. But there is nobody who, after you're born, you go to an office and say, "Oh, you're 3/5, so let me cut you down, you know, to your level." Or it's just like these man-made rules that have been written for this land at this stage. It's just so beyond, and it's trivial. And the people that are continuing to try to uphold them, even with some of the larger bodies of representation in this country that continuously show us that no matter how high they ascend, that they still are low-class people, unfortunately. And I'm speaking of the Republicans, the GOPs, and I'm being very specific because the shenanigans that they continue to show us in regards to what they're doing in office is just beyond. Like, I think it was 130 members paid a $500 fine just to go against Nancy Pelosi's rule to continue to wear the mask. So if you don't wear the mask in the Senate or the Congress, you're fined $500. So 130 of them show their disapproval for that and, you know, went forward and paid the fine. And I'm just like, These are supposed to be the creme de la creme, quote unquote, the people who have ascended to the top that are supposed to represent us. And they are more childish than, as some like to say, them ghetto people from the hood.
Let me add to that. I want to add to that because I want to tell you right now that it has been like that for years. I'm going to take from believe it or not, Al Capone. Al Capone once said, he said, you know what? We're not the real gangsters. The real gangsters is the ones that control this government. They are the real gangsters in this world. Because if you look at the way this government is run by gangsters. You think it's the whole mentality, you know, the hood is not even defined in the poor houses of the project anymore. It's always been beyond that. It's those who are in the rich neighborhoods and the high and mighty, the ones that are in it. Because even if you look at fraternities and sororities in some time, it's a gang affiliation. You know, Bloods got, you know, they got the women Crips and the Blood Men Crips. You know, the women Crips got their own set, and it's, they're associated with the men Crips. So, you know, in being in that mentality, same thing with the fraternity. They have the sisterhood and which is in the brotherhood of the same fraternity and frat. And the way I was explained to me just recently to that, the way these so-called high society fraternities are run now, it's run like a gangster. I mean, you have to be initiated to get in. And once you're initiated to get in, you have to do certain things that you might not normally want to do to be a member. And you have these secret handshakes and all this secretness going around. So if you look at that, you're saying that, oh, hold up. And then once you graduate from the college or the university, the institution, you can be placed in unique places. And most of them are being put in place of power. And because of that, you see, they take that game mentality to the Senate, to the House, to the mayor's office, to the city councils, the selectmen's. It's all being pushed as a, believe it or not, it's a chessboard that we're not even paying attention to.
And to the NBA.
If we don't, right. Because you look at it. Hold up. You're saying it. Because it's real. It's so dang real that it's impossible. If you're not paying attention to it, it's going to slap you in the face. And because, you know what, I'm not paying attention. But you know what, let me tell you something. There is something that's been underneath the radar that I'm glad, and I'm not going to say too much about it, but Black Wall Street, believe it or not, is making a comeback. But it's under the radar, and I'm happy it's there like that. Because you know why? Because when it comes full-blown up in your face, yeah, we can make our own changes. We can put our own people in position, and we can re-strengthen the Black Caucus. That needs to be re-strengthened. That needs to be rebuilt, honestly. But this generation, the Black Caucus, needs to be definitely rebuilt and put into in a better strengthened place. We need more Black people on the, not just the Democratic side, but as the Republican side as well as the liberal independent parties. We need more people, our people put in these places so that we can be a vital person, our people, to help make these so-called decisions properly. Because look, we're being affected as a community so deeply that it's beyond measure. And that when it comes to the policing issue, well, the police reform bill has been sitting on the desk for the past 8 months. I met the sister from
but you ain't
Utah.
Asian.
Yeah, Sister Lexi, actually.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we're not Asian, so yeah, that's why. Well, we already know why that part that is. you know, Sister Lexi, I talked to her. She's the one that wrote the bill and submitted to the Utah after the George Floyd situation happened and the Breonna Taylor situation. And that's when they kicked that so-called governor, mayor. He's fired. And then he found his butt in the middle of the riots and the protests, trying to help in the protest. They kicked him out of the protest. And then he found the whole darn city, everything started burning up. You know, these kind of things kept on happening. But he took the bill, tried to bring it to the pass in Utah, and then bring it out to Washington, D.C. Mitt Romney. You know, I can't remember his name. All I know is he got them big old bushy eyebrows. He just gets... you can never even see if he's got eyes or eyebrows. But he comes up and he supports the bill and brings it up. It's been sitting in Washington, D.C. They not come up with a proper police reform bill, accountability bill. And from what I hear is that, you know, the training sort of stinks. The training.
You know why?
I'd like to hear this one. Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna be brief. Because they're afraid of them. They're afraid of the backlash from the police benevolency associations that would say, you know, just like they immediately said for any celebrity that supported Black Lives Matter, they would no longer protect them. They wouldn't do private security for them.
Well,
that's
you
all.
Know, I just think it's really just gotten I went to the police department yesterday, like I said, we're doing the ambassador program, and from the chief of police, he told me in this state here, which is Maine, that it's like a 15-minute course they take in psych evaluation. That don't make any sense. Hold on a second. A police officer only has 3 seconds to evaluate the mental state of a person when he is sent on a scene. If you're not properly trained, you telling me I'm taking a 15-minute course to evaluate a bunch of people with different disabilities or different situations, and after doing under three minutes, and you only give me a 15-minute course? Does that make any sense to anybody on here? A 15-minute course. It's a pamphlet. He showed
me crazy?
The pamphlet.
Are you crazy? Are you sane? Are you okay? I mean, I'm just being facetious based on what you're saying. You know, I'm just asking those questions. Like, hey, how you doing? Are you crazy? I mean, that's 3 seconds, right?
Yeah. That's what they're essentially doing. It doesn't make any sense. Come on. Listen. You cannot protect me. If I have a mental breakdown, okay? If I have a mental breakdown and I'm planning to do harm to myself or somebody else, you cannot sit there and let me say I'm fine and then turn around. You say, okay, I walk away. And now this goes back to our original part, white privilege issue, okay? So if a white privileged person is coming up to a white guy and says, I'm fine, I'm fine, but he don't know that he got 12 AK-47s, a couple grenades, some C4, he's stashed in the basement somewhere, and this fool's sitting there, and he's saying, I'm fine. But he had a mental breakdown, but he's got all the weapons, and you like, okay, all right, white brother, go ahead, you're fine.
We've seen that with the shooters, with most of the active shooters. Been something, most of their backstories that, you know, they've had a lot of ammunition, And, you know, apparently they must have never had, they must all have no friends that could key in on any of the signs of their insanity. There is where someone could say, hey, I think we have a problem with this guy. Or even to the video that I sent to both of you guys with the cop killer out of New Mexico. Hey, like, how nice could the cop be? How how differently could the cop have treated him in comparison to? And I'm gonna put it in perspective, right? So what we're discussing right now for people that are just listening is unfortunately an assassination murder of an officer in the line of duty, just trying to do a routine stop. And he was so nice, so humble, so polite to this person who, you know, gets out the car and grabs a, as we call it, and when they want to call it this, an assault rifle, which is basically a long rifle or AR-15, something to that capacity, and just starts unloading on the guy. Now, just comparing this, I want to set the picture. Philando Castile sitting in the passenger seat, enunciating, speaking very clearly to the officer in Minnesota, acknowledging that he has a concealed license, acknowledging that there's a weapon in the car. He wants to give the weapon to the officer as well as his ID so the officer can have it throughout the stop, run the check that he's supposed to run. But the officer steps back like he's about to shoot a goddamn jump shot and just unloads on this man, murders him with a child sitting in the back seat, screaming at the top of her lungs. So you had no regard for the child in the back seat, let alone the person who was being very respectful, following the law, acknowledging he had a gun in the car, trying to give you the proper paperwork and the weapon so you can run it, hold it, whatever you needed to do during the stop. Y'all got the floor. Y'all got the floor. I just set the scene.
I just couldn't believe it. And you know, I just really tried to watch the video and to just look at the saying, how he was just like, I mean, if you want to, you don't have to. Well, if you like to, that, come on, man. Come on. Officer's supposed to control the scene. The number one, one of the first things they train you in police training is to control the scene. Did anybody in here see that? Did he control that scene properly? Did he feel like he controlled that scene? No.
I think he was. He didn't control it in an aggressive sense. I felt like he had a handle on the situation and tried to give this man a pass, thinking like, oh, he's a white guy, he's not going to do anything.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. Yes. And it's such a shame when you showed me that. I was like, what? It's crazy because he was allowed to get out of the car. None of the stuff that, you know, people of color are required to do. Get the weapon and just shoot him. And the cop was so confident that nothing was going to happen, he was caught off guard because it's a problem. They're looking at us, people of color, already before they even get to the situation. They're already ready. They are already ready to be aggressive. They're already ready to handle it in a different way. Just like the guy was talking about, he said something that didn't make sense to me last week about pretty much it's our fault that if anything happens, we're responsible. No, I don't agree with that.
You better be quiet. You better listen. You better follow the rules. Oh, I'm sorry.
Right. We're going above and beyond. People are now teaching their sons and their daughters how to respond and how to act. And guess what? That's not working. So what do you
and how do? How to be afraid. Let's say how to be afraid.
Yes.
Inclusive.
How to not be
how
killed.
How to be afraid of police officers.
This, all right. I see what you're saying, sister. But see, the thing is, I think what it is teaching them like that. But see, the thing is, no one's really using the proper skills. I don't know. I just honestly, I think I got lucky, honestly, because not because of who I'm related to or anything. It's because the first thing the nation gave me when I was in the nation, they gave us a de-escalation police manual. And it seriously, it gave us a whole. All right, so everybody who does not have a pen and paper, please get it right now because I'm about to lay down the smackdown. Because here's what we do: one, if a police officer pulls you over, do not wait another second. First, get to a safe location. That's number one. Two, well, as soon as you pull over, shut the engine off. Make sure your window is down at a safe level so the officer can see your eyes and have a view of the seat next to you. Not to pull it all the way down, but this is enough. Three, also make sure your door is locked. Do not unlock your door. You take the engine key out and you put it on the side. You do not keep your car running through the whole experience at all. Okay, four, after you do that, your first thing you do, you go into your legal matters of language. Watch your language. You ask, what is the problem, officer? Why did you pull me over, officer? Is there any issue that I need to know about, officer? But you, before you even get to that part, please say, how are you doing today, sir? How are you doing today, ma'am? How was your day? De-escalate by showing a calm and kind manner. And once you're able to do those things and follow that step, then you are to get into the legal matter of finding out. One, if you have a speedometer, like a Google Maps, gives a mile per hour. You can screenshot, you can take a screenshot of your speed that you are driving at. If you're using Google Maps, that's the way to do it.
Wait. Now, if you do that, now they can give you a ticket and say you was operating the vehicle with a mobile device in your hand, and that's a $250 ticket.
Ooh,
I'm just saying.
Some states, I guess that's most states I've been to, you never had to do that. But in most states, there's also, you know, what you want to do is make sure that you have proof of evidence. The main point of me making that statement there was make sure you have proof of evidence of what you were exactly doing or weren't doing. If they say it was like Mississippi will pull you over if you don't have four screws on your license plate. Okay. This is serious.
Shut up.
I'm serious.
Stop talking, please.
I'm telling you straight out. It's happened to me. I've got pulled over because I didn't have all four screws in my license plate.
Okay. I got one even better. You could take some of your pandemic stimulus money and you could just buy your body cam and wear your body cam every time you get in your car. It's only $99 on Amazon. So, hey.
Amazon, you owe us a dollar now.
Amazon, there you go.
So, yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, body cam is good. Installing video cameras in the car is another good way to do it. Upgrade your security system in your car so that when an officer does approach you, have evidence, have a backup camera, Some iPhones have now codes like you can put in to your phone. If you have an iPhone, Android has also some programs of a tracking device so people can know where you're at. Find these two. They're listed on there. If you want some more information, don't forget you can contact us, 516-418-5805 at the station, and we'll be glad to work with you and be able to help you figure out a game plan. But before we go into that.
One more thing, brother. We could also just hire some people that just really want to be cops and do it the professional way. That would be quite nice.
Oh, that's the cheap way.
That's the easy solution. You know what I mean? Like that's the thing that I wanted to get into was, I know we've heard the negative barbs. I know I've tried to be very light about it today. But you know, on a more serious note, like can we get to a point of how can a cop be a good cop? That's a great question. How can a cop be a good cop? How can you just do your job without coming to work and screwing up so bad that you end someone's life? Or you have to physically, dominate them to the point where they may be disabled for the rest of their lives because of your aggression. You know, can we start drug testing them frequently for steroids? Can we start drug testing them for the narcotics that – you know, travel through the system frequently? Because now some of the things that I would say that I've seen demonstrated in the behaviors and the mishaps that have occurred that have played out through national media, I think those are strong signs of people who have been utilizing some anabolic steroids, which typically makes you very aggressive, makes you super, super sensitive, when it very edgy, or, you know, it's just too much usage of caffeine, because, you know, people fail to realize that caffeine is a stimulant, and it takes you on your highs, it takes you on your lows, and it causes you to have mood swings if you're using it too much. So if you got these guys that are working swing shifts, working overnight shifts, that may have to switch up infrequently. So you got them taking coffee, taking Monsters, taking Red Bulls, taking steroids. All of these things are making them jittery, making them very antsy and fidgety. And then, of course, sleep deprivation is a key thing as well. Like, let's talk about the simple things that are realistic that can be controlled. Like, are we managing the manpower effectively to where these guys can get enough rest to be able to come back in and serve people with a clear head, you know? And when they are in violent situations, let's just say, hey, they had to break up a fight, it got physical, you know, are you giving them time off so that they can decompress before they return back, before it turns into a situation where they're looking for that next incident? Because if you feel that you're a gladiator and your job is to battle, then that is going to make you hyper or microaggressive when it comes to interacting with people. You're going to be very short patience. You're going to be very snippy with the people when they're trying to explain themselves, because in your mind, you got all the answers. You got it all figured out. And I think that's a lot of the things that we see as far as behavior demonstrated in a lot of these incidents, where people are, you know, as the gentleman said last week, you know, oh, they look crazy because they out there, they're emotional, they're trying to plead and beg. Okay, but when you get in trouble, let's start from grade school. What do? You know, you turn very soft, you looking for the right things to say to get you out of trouble. People don't really understand law or these codes that are going to be thrown at them. And so, yes, they're going to be passionate. They're going to be emotional. They're going to be in an irrational state that could irritate someone even more who's already short patient. So those are things that can be managed by the department, by scheduling properly, by doing the checks as far as drug testing and things of that nature, to make sure that these guys aren't trying to get jacked, trying to get so buff that, you know, they're walking around looking like, you know, bodybuilders in uniform, which is almost a natural, you know. Yeah, it's a dead giveaway. You know, like when we were looking at the Home Run Derby years ago, and it was Sosa against McGuire, and McGuire was looking like, you know, he was looking like a lumberjack that chopped down trees, versus, you know, the other guy who was, you know, he was an average build person. And then the truth that came out thereafter was, you know, he was possibly or allegedly taking steroids to enhance his performance. And so I don't know if you guys agree or disagree with the things that I just laid out, but that's where I think the police departments can actually step it up and actually figure out a better way to control that process. And lastly, if your patrolmen spend 80-90% of their time hiding in the bushes off of the highways or in the cities, backed in against the sign, trying to hide just to create traffic tickets, how about you lay some of the people off because you overstaffed? Because if that's really crime, if that's really crime in policing, which is making people excitable by just backing up in the woods or off the road slightly, or even hiding, you got to be real about it, hiding in the cut, trying to entrap them just for traffic tickets, my guy, that means y'all crime rate ain't that high. You don't need all them officers. And
well,
there is,
you're right.
That's police reform right there in the simplest fashion of let's stop overpaying people who ain't doing no damn job.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm going to say this, that I noticed too, that the statistics behind that that supports you, what you're saying is being, was revealed, we were not, like last night on Dateline, we was watching the program, and it says that in Louisiana, which has now become a hotbed of injustice, in St. Louis is now, and as well as New Orleans, has been a epicenter for a federal investigation on the police departments and how they are policing the area. There's a great divide, of course, you know, in New Orleans where they have the wall. Where, you know, blacks on one side, whites on the other. But see, the thing is, the most of the policing is 51 to 50% is being more police officers are patrolling into the black neighborhoods than they are patrolling into the white neighborhoods than it is. It's because they, you know, those new cops come in and they're looking for stripes. They want that promotion, that big boom, boom, whatever. But you see these things going on, and it's a constant issue. But it seems like Lowman. Is it Lowman who was responding in fall of 2014 in Cleveland Park, where 12-year-old Jamara Rice was playing with what turned out to be a toy gun. Lowman shot him dead. So this, you know, that was police officer. He shot a kid over the toy gun. That's just one
right.
issue. That's the St. Louis. Okay, we have other
wrong,
issue.
But right, right.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? These kind of things keep happening where, you know, we're trying to have our normal childhood. And we go back to the time when we was kids where Dennis the Menace was on TV, playing on TV. And what was Dennis the Menace playing with? A pop gun. So you talking about black
right.
kids can't play with a pop gun like, you know, like normal kids, but only white kids can play with a pop gun or a Nerf gun? Are you trying to tell me that? I think if that's the case, then you know what? We should call the brother who invented the Nerf gun and tell him, yo, we are not selling to you white people no more. Sorry. That goes right back to what I said to you about a couple weeks ago. We need to take all our inventions that we have done, take it, pull it off the shelves, and tell them, listen, I may have done this with you, but you don't have the right anymore. It's my invention. I invented it. Give it back. Because I'm, you know,
that goes to your point. The point you made earlier that police have a 3 second to assess a situation. So if it's a 3 second to assess a situation, to the point that you made earlier in this show, and mm-hmm. to the point that I just made where, hey man, if he didn't get enough rest, sleep deprivation, if he's charged up off steroids, he ready for action because it's been a while since he, you know, cracked somebody in the face, you know, those type of things, that's the wrong type of person that we're hiring. This mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. Like, we got to get back to the point of looking at, you know, for people who've managed, look at our FTE, which is our full-time employees, and say, okay, what are they doing wrong? If a majority of your write-ups are traffic citations, or you're taking people in from stop and frisk, that's not cops' work. People are bound to make a mistake when they see a cop because instinctively fear sets in. Oh, there goes a cop, man. Let me slow down. Let me try to do everything right. Because that fear is already in set to not make a mistake so that the cop doesn't get behind them and run their plate. The cop doesn't walk up on them and ask them for ID. And then that's when it snowballs and goes downhill, as we discussed last week, where, you know, it could lead to other things because the person may have, unbeknownst to them, they may have a warrant. It doesn't necessarily mean that a person is always a criminal. People do shit. People do shit and they're unaware of it. They're driving around in their car and they may run a toll, and it's oversight. Mm-hmm. And that toll may go into collections, and that collection may require a summon in to see, you know, a judge on a bench warrant. People do stuff that is not technically criminally motivated. It's an accident. And sometimes people don't know what's on their records. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just goes back to nobody's bigger than the other person. We're all people. And if we can have a conversation, a respectable conversation, where we're listening as well as assessing and then trying to give direction, whether it, unfortunately, whether it results to an arrest or if it results to a warning, the cops got to come back down to ground level, man, and start seeing every human as the same.
Wow.
Treating every human as the same. That's real simple. It's like, it's not rocket science. All of the problems
Tom, let me ask y'all. I'm going to ask both of y'all this question. If that's the case right now, so what do y'all think about what Morgan Freeman said when he had that interview with Mike Wallace?
Give me the statement.
He said, Mike Wallace asked him, so what do you see? He says, you see all this stuff going on out there in racial issues. What do you think is the solution for the racial issue in America? And Morgan Freeman replied, stop talking about it. Mike Wallace said, just stop about it. He said, you're Mike. I'm Morgan. You know who I am. I'm a human being. You're a human being. Just stop talking about it. He said, so what? No, don't have a discussion about any of the issues that's going on? Just stop talking about it. So what do you all think about that statement to apply to what we are talking about now?
Go ahead, sister.
I was shocked by his response when I first heard that, because I even actually called my mom. It's like, guess what Morgan Freeman said? And so I think in a way, I tried to understand it from his perspective, but I think in a way he's trying to say, if we don't bring attention to it, it won't be so much aggression and frustration behind it. We won't be putting light to the fire, maybe. But then also to say, don't talk about it. That's like, sweeping dirt under the rug. It's still dirty, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't agree with that. I think things need to be talked about. Things need to be brought to the light so that addressed. But we won't ever address them if we don't have the right people in positions of authority to place the right people that need to be in there. Like you asked that question earlier, how is it that we can make the officers better? You know, we're hiring people that don't need to be a police officer, period. If you have a racist mm-hmm. problem, that should automatically disqualify you. It should be harder to be, you should have to go through more testing to be an officer, because when you're people, a lot of people do it because they want power, they want authority. And then a lot of people get in and they're abusing their powers. We need to figure out a way where we can weed all of those people out. People need to go through something that's going to say, hey, you know, I'm for the people. You know, because when you're saying you're an officer, they have weapons and all of that, and they can take someone's life. We're seeing it every day. And you need to be held to a higher standard, going through more testing, doing more background checks, reaching out to whoever you can to find out, because they have so many tests for anything, figure out if you're this or that. So do it with the officers, because all they have to do is make one choice, and that can be the wrong choice, and now somebody is not here anymore because
Ooh.
You're constantly making the wrong choice.
Mm.
So,
Tone?
Oh, go ahead.
I partly agree with that, but I also disagree with it. More specifically about the – I disagree with the talk about it, because I'm going to tell you something. In my lifetime, living through integration, the less people verbalize racial epithets, the more people got along. I went to a school in the formative years in high school that was very blended. And there was, I mean, damn, I was at the United Nations, literally. You know, I had West Indian people, Indian people from the country of India. I've had white people, black people, and not one time I can recall truthfully an incident came about because someone used a racial slur against another person.
Mm.
But I think what has happened over the years, as we've grown into adults and you start making money and privately start doing more adult things, such as having an affection for firearms and wanting to hunt or wanting to just go and shoot, you know, just to stay up on your shot, or you know, you include alcohol and for some drugs in the party scene. And so your groups narrow down as you become a true adult. And those social groups tend to dictate how reactive we are as humans, where I've seen classmates that literally hugged, embraced, hung out around black people pretty much 1,000% of their life. And soon as Trump made it his campaign, he was ready to run. this guy's whole rhetoric and life changed before us on social media. And we're like, wow, that's kind of crazy, because, you know, we ate lunch with him every day. We went to his house from time to time. I mean, all he dated was black women at one point. And it was like, you know, every little fake flag that they have redesigned with the blue stripes in there, with the blue Lives Matters. And these are fake flags because, hey, the country didn't make it a decree. The people made it their own flag. So these are fake flags. But he started embracing all of these little subcultures, as I'm saying. And, again, it's more indicative to you being able to make decisions based on who you hang around more so in your adult years versus your youth. And unfortunately, it's been so vocal now because it plays out through social media a lot of times. It plays out through mass media news. And to me, it really has become an issue more so in the last 6 years, more than ever, than before post-civil rights movement, because I wasn't alive at that time to tell you what the climate was. But up until 6 years ago, I didn't feel the threat of just my everyday neighbor slinging mud and talking about, you know, ninja this and brown this and that. No, that wasn't a thing. And my friend girl, you know, she's called me, and she's had, in the last year, adults have attacked her son just hanging around the community, again, fraternizing and just being a kid amongst his peer groups, because people have decided, I don't want my son hanging with black kids. And I'm like, wow, this is really sad and sickening at this point. But again, to my point, like I said, that's the only thing that I really disagree with. I just feel like, you know, as they say, less is more sometimes. I think we will get further as over the last couple of months, you know, since Donald Trump has been banned from social media. I think the climate has kind of like the dust has settled. People are kind of simmering down, but it's still a few out there that feel like, hey, I was birthed through Trump. And that clandestine group that's still holding on to the Cobra Clutch, like he's coming back in 2024, those relics that are out there, you know, it's a few of them. Those are the problems. Those are the problems that's going to exist. But I think everybody else is kind of settling down because they want to travel, because they want to go to restaurants. They want to be entertained. They want to go to sporting events. Like, that stuff is resonating even more now, to where that dichotomy that was there before is starting to come back into and be a little more ever-present. At least that's the viewpoint that I have. And I travel frequently enough to kind of make that decision of being on the ground, you know, being in Arizona, being in California frequently enough. And it's like, you know, people just want to get things back to normal at this stage. But we got to stop overhyping the situation. And Facebook got to stop doing this, because they're the biggest problems. When they start hyping the police brutality, police murders, and it becomes a real every summer, May to September, watch your computer. It's always the black on black crime, or it's the police incidents that kind of dominate during that period every year, because this is the imagery that they want to project about the people. And then the people buy into the propaganda, and now they're sitting around like, okay, what's going to happen next? Just like the Sister Sophia, like I told you last week, I was like, for the police to tell us that we're the problem, and let alone, let's just say from 1990 to present, they've probably paid out over $1 billion in punitive damages for wrongdoing and murders to civilians. Who really has the problem?
You know what?
Yeah,
you're right. You're right, because we look at it in track of it. But what you do is we constantly lose track of what we're supposed to be doing, and that we're doing what we're not supposed to be doing as a community or as a people. And when we go into people that we talk about with, like Morgan Freeman, you got to think about this too. Morgan Freeman was one of the first black actors to actually play Malcolm in the early age. We're right close to the time when Malcolm was assassinated. And that, and I seen the movie. I went to the library because I wanted to learn about Malcolm X. And the whole script was completely garbage. And he took the job. I don't understand why, but he took the job. And he took that job, and he just made it. It was horrible, and it's something that that needs to be addressed too, because he made Malcolm seem like a criminal, but yet this is the same man who took who won a Golden Globes and award after award for playing a lieutenant in the Buffalo Soldiers' Glory. And then we have to deal with these issues where he's supposed to be a representative. And even though he tried to be a representative for same-sex marriage and for blacks in the same-sex marriage era, he tried to become a person that is standing up for equal rights all the way around. He's never, ever... he's never put it out to helping people on the community on a wide scale where he's done it in his movies. He took these scripts, but he's never been a person where I can say, well, guess what? We need to stand up and do it. And he's not saying he's standing up for Martin Luther King. He's not saying for anybody. He is a person who lives up in North Mississippi in a ranch. It just does not really stand for anything for us. He has not made any mark on us to say, okay, we should live our lives like this. But he somehow deludes us. He's an illusion that he has done something, but he has done really nothing. It's past that time in the hour, brothers. It's too old. We're going to get into the second half of it is. And don't forget to sign up for them classes, Sister Sophia's classes right there for you. If you're having that love issues or conversation, you definitely want to be able to get that proper training. Please. Don't forget to get that link. Get that Insta. Don't forget to download the app and you can be updated to the latest thing in the news. So here we go. What you're going to get out right now, I want to just let you all know, listen, the biggest thing we're going into part two, we want to let you know is this beef that's been going on with Omar Johnson and Brother Emmanuel. This thing is just, they starting to do spoofs, commentary. I'm hearing people talking about they making some kind of brief movies and stuff like that. I'm like, hold up. All this over this thing. Now, I'm going to play a clip for everybody, and then we're going to go dig into the rest of this and get into it. So, is everybody staying too long?
Has a double under the weight?
You know, again, personal stuff, lost in myself, not caring. Just, right? Like, straight up, it was, I stopped giving a damn. You know, I wasn't working as hard. I stopped going on runs and things like that.
And during that time, have you had sex?
During what time, when I was younger?
During the time during the time you fell off, were you having sex at any time during that time?
Yeah, for sure, you know.
And that's the problem, guys. You continue to stick your penis in this. That's the problem. That's why they can get on the camera and start talking about mediocre men when as big as a planet, smoking a cigarette. I mean, what am I supposed to do with this? I'm like, okay. I cannot honestly sit back and listen to a woman who's built like the planet Ego talk about mediocre men while she's smoking out of motherfucking Newport. Are you serious?
Talk to us more like Umar.
What makes it so bad about these so-called life coaches?
the Prince of Pan-African. Big Papa's in the house.
People send me clips of some of these YouTubian opportunists.
Run my donations.
I'm seeing some of them quote me verbatim without giving credit to their source.
But I think it's funny y'all keep coming over here asking everybody to talk like Umar.
So why are you quoting my material and not referencing me? You obviously watch me.
Queen Mother God, Cocoa Butter, and CMOS Gold.
YouTubian beta male wannabe life coaches that are out there. Now let me say this, because I've been getting questions about these black male life coaches, these uncredentialed, uncertified, untrained, YouTubian black male life coaches. I'm not here to knock nobody. I don't know how anybody feeds their children. I don't know how they keep a roof over their head. I don't know how they keep food in their body. I'm not here to knock anybody's hustle. I'm not here to knock anybody's hustle because I don't know how they feed their children. I've had people try to destroy my profession, my professional career as a certified school psychologist, my professional career as a clinician and a therapist. I've had people try to destroy that because they didn't agree with my political platform. I've had people try to destroy that. So I will never attack another black man's ability to feed his family. Even with the gangster rappers, I will not attack their ability to feed their family. But I do want to say this to the black women out there. I'm disappointed in a lot of my sisters. I am disappointed in a lot of black women because I thought that our sisterhood was evolving to a place that would not tolerate. I thought black sisterhood was evolving to a place that would not tolerate slander and degradation of black women on any level for any reason. I thought, black sisters, that you guys were getting to a place, you sisters, you queens, my beautiful black goddesses, I thought you all were evolving to a place where you would not approve of Eurocentric slander and degradation and debasement and undue attacks on your integrity as a black woman. But I'm seeing black women, out of their thirst for male validation, entertain some of these Negroes who have no history of organizing in the black community. They have no history of fighting for our children. They have no activism resume at all. Why would you subject yourself to that level of insult? Why would you subject yourself to that level of degradation and undue criticism from a complete stranger because you're looking for male validation?
Woo! Oh, that was Dr. Umar at the end. He laid it down for us speechless. Let's get into it. Let's unpack it. And let's look at it. Well, we had Emmanuel started off. We all heard his
right.
his little his
right.
little I'm gonna step back.
I'm sorry. That's right, sister. Don't speak until we tell you can speak. Okay. According to Emmanuel.
Nah,
go ahead. I want you to kick us off.
I'll get the facts first. This thing has gone so viral. It's like everything. It's just gone everybody's talking about it. So we gotta get into this. Mm.
Well, from the stuff that I've watched of Kevin, he seems very if I mean. But some of the stuff, some of the stuff I agreed with, but some of the stuff I didn't. But this statement that you played, because I think she was talking about she fell off right, and he's saying basically, to make sure I understand correctly, basically that the man needs to stop because you need to get yourself together. As long as they're still, you're getting it, getting something from somewhere, you're not going to be motivated to do what it is that you need to do. Or something like that. Did y'all get that?
I personally saw it as, okay, he was just breaking it down to her that, you know, I just took it as he had a temper. He just had a temper that day. It was a bad day for me or something. I just didn't understand.
You know, I think he talks like that. From all the clips I've seen, he's like that. I don't think he had a temper, but I think he's mean to me, kind of. But I agree with what what's his name, Omar? Is saying
Dr. Omar Johnson.
Yeah, that women, the people that have watched his platform, they're looking to him for validation. I do agree with that. And like a person that you don't even know, you're looking to see what it is that he is going to tell you so you can accept it and base your life off of what he's telling you and trying to fit some type of mold that really you don't have to fit. You need to fit your own mold. So I get that and I agree with that, but it's just a lot of craziness to me because I watched him.
Say it with your chest.
What did you say?
Speak with your chest. Say it with your chest.
Oh, I'm saying it. I think what I get from Kevin is it seems to me that everything, just from the two videos I've watched, everything has to be up to the man's opinion, like what he's actually saying, without me knowing Dr. Omar was, because my brother, I didn't know who he was. My brother sent me something last week about him, but I didn't know Kevin at all, but I started watching his videos. And he seems to have this idea of what women should be, and they need to live up to it. If not, then it doesn't work. It's not, you're not, like, accepted. So I totally agree with what Omar is saying on that portion. Like, you don't need to be validated by a man. The only person that needs to validate you is yourself. The only person
that needs to accept you is yourself.
But if you're looking for someone else to give you the answer to who you are, it's not up to them to understand who you are, but it's up to you to understand who you are. So your story is your story. It's not their story. So I have a lot to say about that, because I don't believe that, because he was talking about a size 4 is a size 4 regardless of your weight and all of that, because I think he had somebody on there yesterday talking about the weight, and he asked her, what do you think the average weight should be for a female? And she said 140 pounds, 130 to 140 pounds. And he said, well, something about a size 4. Like, no matter, I get what he's saying about if your muscle, regardless if your muscle or fat and all of that, then, and he started talking about how men, the problem is what he just pretty much said today. You need to stop that. Men are giving women the right to do this because they're still constantly providing what they need to the women. But anyway, y'all go ahead and say something, because I think I agree with Omar for the most part, and your validation does not come from somebody.
Let me play devil's advocate here. I want to play devil's advocate. We're going to get into this a little bit, I'm going to play devil's advocate. And when it came to Brother Emmanuel, I got first wind of him back in this last year during the height of the pandemic. And I liked what we were saying were certain issues. Men giving their value away to women that do not deserve their value. And I agree with him on that in that sense, in a lot of sense. Now, Dr. Omar Johnson, honestly, if we know the real history of him, this man has been he's been accused of sexually touching women back at his height in Mississippi, dealing with them, people who were supposed to be part of the OUA, which is the Marcus Garvey movement. Believe it or not, Dr. Omar Johnson is supposed to be the new representative for the OAA, the African League, basically the Pan-Africanism movement. You know, but him being in that position of authority, you know, he has been accused of taking funds for himself and not using it to build what he's supposed to be doing. He has a school in Mississippi that has not been built. He has not really been completed. Yes, he's waiting. He said he keeps waiting for black construction workers and black electricians to volunteer their time. But the license, they're not licensed in that area, or the case may be. He's waiting for a miracle, because we don't have those fields set up. We don't have those things set up. So I personally, if I'm, you know, going to say I would support him and his idea, Mr. Brother Umar, but I do not agree that he should be judging people, judging people or any person at any juncture on their validation or who people should listen to. As you know,
You messed me up. Why you said that? Why did you just say that? Because I'm about to judge both of them. But go ahead.
But Emmanuel, see, let me tell you something. Kevin, let me tell you something about Kevin, though. I am noticing my thing is, you know, he'll tell you straight to your face, you know, what women have been doing to men for years, especially since the 80s. On where that movement came around, I don't need a man kind of talk came out heavy. I don't need a more. Even though Sister Sabaz, you remember Sister Sabaz, well, you know, she's come out, and she still came out just recently talking about, you know, that about the men supporting the black man and so like that, and uplifting the black man as well. But we need to look at these issues of degrading men. Men have been beaten down so much that they give up, you know. I asked a woman one time when I was out and about, and I was just doing some research for this show today, and I asked a woman, "What is the job of a man?" You know, it took her 5 to 10 minutes to come up with an answer. And then you ask her, you say, if you can do everything, if you can cook, you can clean, you can pay the bills, you can fix the car, you can do this, you could do that, what is the man's job? That person still came back and had to wait another 10, 15 minutes to come up the answer. See, the thing is that we are noticing in our society, and not just in the black community, but because what has occurred, has been going on lately, for our allies, they watch what the black man does and they put it to their community. That's why you think about it. 95% of the revenue from hip hop came from the white community purchases. So they watch what we do and they copy us into their society. And that's been going on for years. Right. So with that statistic, we can also apply towards how we treat our women as well. And how women treat us as well. So it becomes a domino effect. And I feel wholeheartedly and definitely deeply that the woman has beaten the man. And then so Brother Kevin is trying to say, woman, you need to stop beating on the man. And yes, it might seem like I'm beating up on you, but be honestly, I'm giving you the same medicine you've been giving to us for this past 20-something plus years. Yes, we want you to be equal. We do see you as equal. You are equal to all, and you have a right to become equal. But the same thing is, don't give a fire and burn a fire in a furnace that does not need to be lit. What you need to do is make things calm and level it out so that we work as a unison together, or as the scriptures might say, equally yoke, end quote. And that's how I would say
it. Yeah, I just say to both of these guys, I call them cornballs.
Why?
I did not agree or disagree with this statement.
I call them cornball.
Why?
It's because. I mean, it's more of the notion that, like you said, you don't need anybody to validate you.
Right.
You know, if you're putting man before yourself,
mm-hmm.
if you're putting man before yourself, or to use him as a measuring stick for how you move, where are your principles? Where are your morals?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if I have to, if I have to study the blueprint of Jay-Z, no pun, in order for me to live and survive, who am I really?
Yeah.
Like, who am I? You understand
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's crazy that women deduce themselves to going on a platform where you know someone is more likely than not is going to try to humiliate you and tear you down with words.
Yeah.
And try to eyeball you and figure out anything to say that's demeaning. And you think that's constructive criticism? It's kind of like the Ricky Lake effect. It's kind of like the Maury Povich effect. You feel me? Oh, Jerry Springer effect. So if that's what you want to subject yourself to as constructive criticism, then you're showing us that you have low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
You're showing us that you're not sure of yourself. And hands down, the best thing for you to do is to retreat, take some time for yourself, and just deal with yourself. That's the best thing for you to do. As they say, sometimes the problem ain't them. Sometimes the problem is you, and you
mm-hmm.
can, and you can work on fixing yourself. Well, back
mm-hmm.
to the point that I made earlier, where people just got to start being people. That's the biggest issue. Because as a whole, again, well, I'm saying two cornballs. who is Dr. Umar? Let's be frank. I mean, person that literally he pops up and makes cameo appearances in life. He's nowhere reachable. He has nothing.
For $40,
no place where you can go and. But on a very short notice, you know what I mean? Like the advertisement starts well in the day, telling you he's gonna be in Philly tomorrow. You know, he don't give you no heads up in order to make that for the right people to get before him and question him. And I've seen that often with a lot of the rhetoric that he has. In regards to Pan-Africanism, in regards to systematic racism and problem solving within the black community. And I say this to a lot of people, and I even said this, you know, sister, when we were speaking, for a lot of people. If you ain't never been to Africa, how you Pan-Africanism? How you going to practice Pan-Africanism? You've never taken a journey to Africa. You never went and explored any country on that continent to identify with. So, quite frankly, are you supporting propaganda that has been put out before you by the media, where you're seeing for $5 a day you can feed a family of da 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 for how many? Is that what you supporting in your Pan-Africanism? Is that what you supporting? Because you don't know the land, you don't know the people, you haven't connected with any tribe, any cultural part of the people to say that you are impacting. So for you to go and buy a dashiki that was made by some Chinese people and put on the shelf at your local store, yeah, I'm gonna get ugly like they get ugly. I'm gonna tear them down the way they try to tear people down. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? That's not representing. How many times have you, with all of your bubble, cameo appearances, how many times have you popped up in Africa? How many times have you shown that you networking and affiliated with people in Africa? You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's here and there, hit and miss. People, as they say, you talk loud, you talk aggressive. So sure, people are going to stand behind you. Sure, people are going to, you know, buy into that, because we are emotional creatures, that being black people. So anybody with the rah-rah, we're going to, yeah, man, he doing his thing. He ready. He, you know, that's the guy. But other than that, bro, I don't see this man doing anything, man, other than having one copy of his little stinking book. As he's using it for photo opportunities and talking to people, I didn't even know that he wrote a book, to be honest with you. You know, that's Dr. Umar. But the Kevin guy, I mean, you kind of suspect, my guy. So I hope that your skeletons, or there are no skeletons in your closet, that can get revealed somewhere down the line where, you know, we see you in an uncompromising photo looking like RuPaul, yet you're coming in with... You're slandering women, and just looking at a woman and saying she's an eyesore. Every woman is beautiful, man. Every woman is beautiful to that person that finds her beautiful. That's why you have a lot of BBW women, and I know they say they don't like that expression no more. I heard that for some of the young ones in Clubhouse, but it's a easy or recognizable term. There's a lot of BBWs that are with companions versus, you know, as Monique used to say, you skinny witches. You skinny witches are still single. And you know what I'm saying? That's fluffy pancake makers out here doing our thing. So that's what I'm saying. Everybody is beautiful. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Yeah. So for anyone to go out there and say, I need this man to tell me that I look good, to validate myself, you sound like a fool. But the American standard for black women through media, through arts and entertainment, has really made us devalue ourselves, and the trends and the tone, the cultural trends that have been set by wearing the European wigs, wearing the crazy nails. You got to have your nail game where you're looking like, you know, some wildebeest in the freaking woods with some sparkles on your fingers. It's like, what is this? What is this that we're passing on to the next generation of women? Like slowly but surely, the woman is becoming less of a woman in the sense of a caretaker and a nurturer, and more of a hunter like a man, where it's like, I got to find me a dude. I got to get me a man. I got to take him. Mm-hmm. I got to make him mine. But then what do you have to offer for him? You can't cook. You don't know how to keep a house. Your hygiene is bad for a lot of them. And your moral values are nothing more than, when is the next party? When is First Friday? When is the next Masonry auxiliary ball, or this, that, or the other? So it's those type of things that I look at, and I'm just like, man, over the last 20 years of in society, of the things of what I've seen,
I'm just seeing the modernization of the black woman influence women around the world, unfortunately, to live a lie, and that's the nicest way that I can put it, because our impact impacts Africa, because they're watching us, they're looking at us in the magazines, they're looking at us on film, they're looking at us, you know what I'm saying, through Instagram and all of these other platforms where they can see us. So there is no cultural influence. It's just
right.
It's materialism. It's death for materialism that has happened amongst our people, the women. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, who raised kids anymore?
Right.
they have babies, right, and they want to snap back to being whatever size they was before they had the baby. And then they want to be back on the party scene if that's their character image in the public eye. That's all they want to be known for, is being the it girl, the party girl. Well, when do you slow down and make a home a home? And I'm not necessarily saying that you have to be involved. I'm just saying, even for yourself, to take time to study, to be on, to have moral standards for yourself. And it doesn't have to be about, I got to make enough money to drive a BMW. I got to make enough money to live over in this house. I love natural people who keep it real and got their shea butter and wearing their hair, even if it's a big fro or even if it's a little skinny bitty ponytail. Hey, that's who you are. That's how your creator made you. And that ain't nothing to be ashamed of, because you're beautiful.
Right.
Keeping it a book.
Well, it's that time again, folks. And you know what? We're going to have to take this on to next Thursday. So tune in next Thursday. You know what time it is. And we're going to keep on. And you keep trucking. And we keep trucking. And we'll see you next week. My name is Brother Alfred. We are the Powerhouse Squad. And we'll see you next week.
Peace.